League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Joining you once again, we are just days away now from the start of the 2020 baseball season. Milwaukee Brewers will open up on Friday in Chicago. You know this already. They've got scrimmages lined up in the meantime. And of course, we got to talk about it. We got to talk about opening day. And with me, as always, is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And a bonus, both guys are with me today. Todd Rosiak, also Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, joining me on the other line. And to get started, because if you check out jsonline.com, first of all, there's a good flash sale going on right now. If you can get great discounted a year's worth of subscription for just $39, that deal ends on Thursday, so jump over to that right away. You can also check out Todd's recap of the National League Central. It's kind of hard to recap the season at all, Todd, because 60-game sample, you just really feels like anything could happen. A lot of love out there for the Cincinnati Reds as a possible contender. And the Brewers are, to me, just such an enigma. You know, they could win this division. They could be the best team in the National League. They could finish below 500. I think you could say that about just about any team. But as you were putting together this look at the NL Central, anything jump out at you? Any names we may have forgotten that changed teams that are now going to be part of this picture? What were some of the, you know, where I guess, do you feel like the Brewers fit in here?
Well, before we even get to that, JR, I would like to wish my esteemed colleague, Tom Hodricourt, a happy 79th birthday.
Yes!
Working hard and podcasting on his birthday. He deserves a tip of the cap for that.
My apologies, Tom, for not acknowledging that immediately, right out of the gate.
Please, these things, at my age, these things are solemn occasions, not celebrations.
I'm sorry you can't celebrate your 50th anniversary on the town, given what's going on in the world.
He's closing
50th birthday, I should say.
He's closing in on his 50th anniversary on the Brewers beat, so with any luck.
Maybe I didn't misspeak.
Unfortunately, that's true. I resemble that remark, as we like to say.
You did just write a book about the 50 years of Milwaukee Brewers history. I mean, who better? Am I right?
I've captured a lot of it. I don't know if captured's the right word. I've witnessed a lot of it.
So we will talk. Tom, I want to talk to you about the pitching, because I know you wrote about that at jsonline.com today as well. But the National League Central, I mean, I found myself going through some of these rosters and figuring out, okay, did I remember that guy had moved to this team, had been traded or whatever? Like, Marcell Ozuna's on the Braves now. I mean, there's a lot that I had to reacquaint myself with, things that happened, you know, 6 months ago that are just now going to come to roost.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, you mentioned the Reds, and it's hard to look past what they did in the offseason. They, you know, years and years of kind of pinching pennies and rebuilding and rebuilding, and all of a sudden they go all in. They've got to be somewhat upset with the way the COVID affected their plans, and of course they can still win, but there's always going to be an asterisk next to the team that winds up winning the World Series. But adding Moustakas and Nick Castellanos and Shogo Akiyama, that's three big signings, and really kind of stretches out and bolsters that lineup that they have, which is already anchored by Eugenio Suarez, who came just shy of hitting 50 homers last year. And then you look at what they have coming back with Luis Castillo, Trevor Bauer, and Sonny Gray, and another ex-Brewer, Wade Miley. That's a pretty darn good starting rotation, too. So, you know, I think you have to look at the Reds as the prohibitive favorite at this point. You figure the Cubs have enough talent that they're going to be in the mix as usual. You know, Cardinals lost Ozuna, like you noted, but they've got some nice players coming back. And for whatever reason, they're always in the mix, it seems like, regardless of whatever changes they make or whatever misfortune befalls them. They always wind up in the mix at some point. So that leaves us with, aside from the Brewers, the god-awful Pirates. And, you got to feel bad for that fan base after everything that's gone on with that franchise over the last X number of years. So, yeah, it's going to be very important, obviously, for every team, the Brewers included, to perform well 40 of the 60 games in the Central this year, and may the best team win.
Pirates about to get a visitor in their home ballpark, the Toronto Blue Jays. I guess it's still developing as we record this on Wednesday, but it looks like they'll be playing some of their home games in, at PNC Park in Pittsburgh. So that's an added wrinkle for Pittsburgh fans, but not that any fans are going to the games in any of the venues this year. Tom, I sort of alluded to it. The pitching has been sort of interesting for the Brewers, and I realize we can't really make many judgments based on what we've been able to see, the few intra squad games and the sort of limited camp that the Brewers have had. But you do have Brett Anderson going on the disabled list with a blister, injured list for at least the first 10 days of the season, I believe. And all of a sudden, Corbin Burnes, who was sort of an enigma, was so great out of the bullpen in 2018, struggled so badly in 2019. He's looked so good. He finds himself now starting in the second game of the season. He'll be backing up Brandon Woodruff in that second game at Wrigley Field. Some of that is just because guys like Josh Lindblom were on a different schedule and weren't going to bump up. Freddie Peralta, we know he's going to be the third starter. But as you look at this Brewers rotation, it's a little different than I guess I would have anticipated going into the season, when you have an injury, that's bound to happen. But what are sort of your impressions, and what sort of have you seen from those guys on the hill in these, this limited amount you've gotten to see them?
Well, we were cautioned once again in a Zoom with Mr. Council this morning to not put a whole lot of stock into starting and relieving. And, the Brewers have blurred the lines as well as anybody, or more so than most people, the last few years between starting and relieving, and especially in September when you have expanded rosters and more pitchers to use. I sort of look at least the start of the season as just an extension of the past couple of Septembers when the Brewers did quite well by utilizing expanded rosters and especially extra pitchers. This season's going to be the reverse of the way the last few seasons have gone. Instead of having expanded rosters in September, we're having expanded rosters at the start of this season. And then you work your way backwards to even fewer players as you get into the final month this year. So, there's nothing that's not different, and that's different as well. The Brewers do have, five guys who are going to start games to start the season. And in order, that's going to be Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burnes, Freddie Peralta, Adrian Hauser, and Josh Lindblom. But as you noted, Brett Anderson's going to probably be on the DL just for the injured list just for a while, because you can backdate it 3 days. You got Eric Lauer, lurking in the shadows as well. First, he was hurt in the spring, and now he's on the COVID list, but just by contact tracing, not by actually being ill. So it's just going to be a lot of movement in and out. They have all kinds of guys stretched out. Brent Suter's been stretched out as well. So you're just going to see a whole lot of people coming in and out of games. You do have the rule where a reliever comes in and has to at least face three batters or finish the inning. So that changes things a little bit. But This is all a math equation for Craig Counsell and his pitching staff. How do you get to 27 outs? How many guys does it take you to get there? You may see some games where the first guy out pitches one or two innings, and then the next guy comes in and pitches a lot longer than that. So we're truly in the age of out-getting and getting to 27 outs. I think Brandon Woodruff is a guy you'll see them try to get as many innings out of as possible. But after that, I think we're going to see a whole lot of just a constant parade of people in and out of games. And it's going to be very interesting at the end of this when we look back just to see how the Brewers carved up games with their staff. And, I just wonder, What the most innings any pitcher will have on this staff at the end of the 60 games. It's going to be fascinating to see how this is all done by the Brewers.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe this ends up being a template for what's to come, because you mentioned that rule that is a almost a, you know, it's a product from another time already. We haven't seen it in action, but the three batter minimum was something that was going to happen in 2020 anyway. And what you're describing is sort of harkens back to the days of Goose Gossage and relievers, Raleigh Fingers for that matter, relievers going longer than just for an inning or a couple batters. And since teams had to move away from that anyway, maybe the Brewers are the first of many teams to lean into that all the way. Have guys, like you said, Brent Suter working three middle innings. You know, why not? And then you can keep starter counts down, starting pitchers innings counts down, but bridge the gap differently than what we've seen in years past. Specifically about Corbin Burnes and maybe Brandon Woodruff, I mean, it does strike me that those two guys have been about as impressive, certainly on the pitching side, as anybody. You know, we've seen Logan Morrison play very well. We know he's going to make the team. Ben Gamel has kind of been one of the stories of what we might call summer camp with the way he's hit the ball. Todd, are those guys kind of the headliners when we talk about people who've really opened some eyes? Who else should Brewers fans be aware of as we get closer to actual baseball?
First name that you mentioned in that group, I would like to talk about a little bit, Corbin Burnes, just because it's such a great story. You know, obviously, we have to see what he does in an actual game, but just to get to the point where he's starting game two, and I understand, you know, the blister with Brett Anderson factors into it as well, but just the fact that he's in the starting rotation, starting in that first series of the season, after just his monumental struggles last year, it's just a great story and a great tip of the cap to Burnes for basically his intestinal fortitude and doing whatever it took to mentally and physically to get himself back into a place where, you know, not only was he confident performing on the mound, but also delivering with the physical gifts that he has too. I can't imagine that would have been easy for anybody, considering the poundings that he took last year and the number of home runs that he gave up, and, you know, going from starting the bullpen down to Arizona, San Antonio, the pitching lab. It just was a lot for anybody, let alone a young guy who had very limited experience in the major leagues. So he's really going to be an interesting guy to watch. And, you know, you can't help but root for the guy because of everything that he's been through just this last year. And, you know, very well-spoken, very thoughtful guy who clearly wants to do it the right way. So to me, that is the overriding, you know, kind of individual story that I took out of summer camp.
He's literally remade himself physically and mentally. You know, over the winter, he worked with a sports psychologist. He had LASIK surgery, so he no longer wears what were his trademark goggles on the mound. He's changed his delivery. He's changed his repertoire. You know, it's very fitting that Corbin Burnes is rising to the forefront here in 2020, because nothing's the same in 2020 and nothing's the same with him. You know, he's the poster child for this year, in that we never knew what was coming next. And he's a guy that's just totally different. You know, I thought Chris Hook, the pitching coach, had a very fitting comment about Corbin Burnes the other day when we were talking to him about Burnes. He said it's taken him a year to get here. You know, he basically pitched his way out of the rotation in the first month of the season last year, had all kinds of struggles afterwards, like Todd said, up and down from the minors, up back and forth from starting to relieving. And what a journey he's been on. And so you really hope he gets some positive results in games, because he certainly did in camp. I can tell you one thing, JR. Brewers hitters are tired of facing Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burnes. They'd be more than happy to let other teams face those two guys right now.
Yes. And on the other side of that, we've seen a guy like Christian Yelich struggle against some of these frontline pitchers that the Brewers have. And, you know, this is the age-old, you know, the age-old psychology of freaking out over a small sample. Obviously, people know intellectually that Christian Yelich is going to hit the baseball. He's not going to have problems. And yet we, as people who follow the Brewers, have never seen him have any sort of prolonged, at least perceptively, a prolonged, I guess what you'd call a slump. He hasn't really been striking the ball as we've come to know. And obviously, I'm sure the Brewers and everyone affiliated with it are preaching sort of patience, not worrying about it. What have you guys seen from Christian Yelich? And to ask that question, I guess, in sort of an unofficial capacity, you know, do you have a little concern seeing Christian Yelich struggle this close to the start of the season?
I'll take this one. Because I talked to Tom about this yesterday. It was shortly after Yelich struck out yet again and yelled an expletive loudly during his at-bat that everybody could hear. I tweeted that out, and about 5 minutes later, I got a response on Twitter from none other than Chris Narvison, who Brewer fans obviously will remember.
Narvy,
yeah. And he noted to me that he played with Yelich in Miami, and he saw him hit like a .180 his first month or 6 weeks of that season, and then finish the season at 300 and caution me and everybody else that Yelich will be fine, which of course we all know. This is obviously a weird year with spring training, the stop, and now the restart. And, Yelich had only played three games in Cactus League play before spring training was canceled anyway. So to have that long a layoff without seeing live pitching, and then to come into camp and all of a sudden have to hit the ground running facing guys like Hader and Woodruff and everything. It's not easy, obviously. And it's clear that the pitching has been ahead of the hitting at this point. So, maybe Christian will carry that over into the start of the regular season and he'll, take a little while to get going, but ultimately he is going to get going. In a 60 game season, it would be optimal for the Brewers, obviously, to get him going quickly, but that remains to be seen. But I don't think there's really anything that anybody needs to worry about as far as, has Christian Yelich lost it or anything like that.
Right. And speaking of outfielders, or in this case, somebody we know could play outfield, Ryan Braun is, as we record this on Wednesday, preparing to be the designated hitter in a game later tonight against Chicago, the White Sox. But that's the first we've seen him. He's been held out. And I think this sort of is an interesting portal into covering baseball in an era of COVID-19 where there aren't many face-to-face interactions. All we'd really have to go on is what the official word is from a guy like Craig Counsell. And the party line was, well, we're just limiting his at-bats. He doesn't want to get going quite so early. He wants to just get revved up closer to the actual games. And that continued to be the case until it was slowly revealed, well, he's actually got some aches and pains right now and isn't comfortable playing on the field or in the lineup. Again, hopefully the sign Wednesday is that he'll be working his way back, but I have to think there's at least some consideration that he start the year on the injured list as well, although with only 60 games, you can't make those decisions lightly. So what do you guys know about Ryan Braun? What have you heard? What are sort of your, how would you speculate this goes from here?
Well, I mean, he's definitely been struggling with some physical things, apparently an oblique being the major thing. And it's never optimal, to just be out as long as he's been out. He didn't play in any of the seven games of the so-called Blue and Gold World Series. It is a good sign that he's feeling good enough to DH in the exhibition game against the White Sox. There's a few things in Braun's favor and in the Brewers' favor as far as him getting past this and being okay for the weekend. Number one, nobody likes hitting in Wrigley Field more than Ryan Braun. I mean, he is just a monster there. He has killed the Cubs in Wrigley Field. And just in general, he's always seemed to swing the bat well against them. So he's very highly motivated to get in there. The other thing is, thanks to the DH being in the National League this year, they're able to get him at bats there without putting him in the field, which saves wear and tear on his body. He is 36 years old. He has battled some things chronically the last few years. So we'll see how that goes. Certainly it's not above the realm of possibility that he would have to go on the IL. I don't think they want it to come to that. I don't think he wants it to come to that. So if he gets through the game against the White Sox in good shape, the whole team will have a workout day on Friday. And then if he can just be in there to DH, in the Cubs series. I think the Brewers will feel pretty good about that, and so will he. But there's definitely just a lot of stuff in play here for the Brewers going into this start of this series. You know, they do have some guys that are beat up a little bit. They, you know, I talked to Craig Counsell just about the fact that nobody's really ready to play nine innings yet. In a regular camp, you have those 30 exhibition games in which the manager slowly ramps guys up from having one at bat to two at bats to three at bats, and then by the end of camp, you know, guys are ready to play nine innings or close to it. You know, they've only had 3 weeks of camp here, not even that yet. In those inner squad games, only once did they go past five or six innings, and I think they played seven or eight innings. So nobody's ready. Nobody's been playing nine innings. Nobody's probably ready to play nine innings. So beyond the pitchers, you know, coming in and out of games here to start, I think we're going to see the position players doing likewise. But that's everybody's in that same boat. You know, baseball is the one thing that you have to get ready to play by actually playing games. You can practice all you want to. These guys worked out on their own during that 3 month shutdown, but it's not the same thing as doing baseball activity. And it's not the same thing as for the pitchers facing real hitters and for the hitters facing real pitchers. So I think everybody's going to work into this best they can, and you got to avoid being panicky about this 60 game season. You know, it's you know, people have said instead of a marathon, it's a sprint. Craig Counsell's cautioned against that because he said it's not really a sprint. It's a 10K at least. You know, 60 games is still, what, 37% of a regular season, right? So, but the last thing you want to do is blow somebody out here at the start and then have them miss half of the 60 games. That would not be optimal. Everybody's also playing under the specter of COVID, you know, what happens if a guy gets that and has to go on the COVID list? So there's just so much that's different about the way things normally are as we start this. It's going to be real interesting to see how all of this plays out.
Tom, I think just to jump in there for a second, I think that's what's going to be so fascinating about this season is there are just so many variables and so many things we never have had to think about before. And, you know, by the end of it, watch, it's going to be somebody like the Kansas City Royals winning the World Series, something like that. Something crazy.
Or the Pirates that we just made fun of.
Yeah,
Pittsburgh,
I mean, seriously, if they, you know, a bunch of teams get slammed with COVID and, you know, some other guys go down on some other teams, who knows, you know? And then obviously 60 games makes it a lot different. But, you know, I was reading something yesterday about this is a first time in forever that there's going to be a legitimate chance for a 400 hitter. You know, things like that. It's going to, you know, there are going to be guys who are just going to come out of nowhere and, you know, lead the league in homers or whatever. There's going to be all kinds of statistical oddities and weird teams doing things that you don't expect. I think it's, you have to take it for what it is. It's not a true season. It's not a full season, but I still think it's going to be a fun season and hopefully one that finishes.
I think it's one we'll be talking about for the rest of our lives because there's nothing that's like it used to be. There's, you know, we're about to embark on, you know, the phrase going into uncharted territory is probably overused a lot, but we are truly headed there right now. We're all Christopher Columbus on the, you know, the three ships setting sail here, not knowing what in the world we've got ahead of us. And in the way that's, in a way, there's a certain beauty to that, there's going to be so many things that we've never seen before. And it still remains to be seen how players are going to react to playing with no fans in the stands. You can put all the cardboard cutouts you want and put all the piped in noise and music you want, but it's still going to be like playing in the public library at times. And, you know, I think it was David Phelps who joked the other day that they might not get heckled from the stands in Wrigley over the weekend, but the heckling may come from the rooftops across the street. Let's see how good those people's voices are.
Tom, I have a suggestion. Maybe we can bring this up to the Brewers. How about we all pay $50 and they do cardboard cutouts of us and they put us in the clubhouse by players' lockers?
Gosh.
Oh, boy.
they'll cut you out and put you in front of Bronze Locker.
That would just open up. Everybody would turn into Banksy. Everybody would become a graffiti artist. we wouldn't want to really see what goes on there. So, maybe they should. You know, maybe they'll put cardboard cutouts of us in the press box too. Who knows? It's just going to be so fascinating. Just all of this is so fascinating. You can speculate about every single thing that we're going to watch now, but nobody knows how this is going to play out.
I have to admit, on a day when Mr. Hadrecourt celebrates another trip around the sun, that he knows who Banksy is impressive to me. That surprises me. Congratulations, Tom.
Todd loves to say I have nothing but old man references, so every now and then, other than mention Clark Gable and the Three Stooges, I do like to put something that has happened in this millennium out there.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up that noted graffiti artist Van Gogh or something like that, you know?
Da Vinci. Can you imagine Van Gogh just wearing the mask with one ear would just be absolutely brutal for him.
Oh, my God. You'd have to wear the mask that wrap with the elastic that goes around your head, not the ear loop, so you'd be fine.
He would have to have Velcro on one side, you know? You don't have to have many things, but you need two ears right now because we're all wearing masks.
What?
I 100% blame myself for getting this podcast to a place where we're talking about how Vincent Van Gogh would wear a mask in the age of COVID. But speaking of which, that specter does hang over the Brewers to some degree because they do have a player in Luis Urias who is still not available, presumably still going through the protocol of getting back to play after he did test positive for COVID-19. And so there is that gap on the roster right now as well. One of the shortstops that everyone should have, I assume, penciled in to start the year with the Brewers.
And if I could just interject there, JR, the lesson with Luis Urias is a good one because when you go away on the COVID IL, it's not like having a strained hamstring or a broken finger or sore shoulder or any of the normal things that put you on the IL. The thing you go on that COVID IL, and the one thing that you do know is you're not coming off until you have two negative tests at least 24 hours apart. You know, you don't get to come off until then. And you can be asymptomatic like he's been, and it still doesn't matter until you're able to satisfy that COVID protocol that lets you rejoin your teammates. So it's totally unknown in a 60-game season. You know, any lengthy time on whether it's the IL, the COVID IL or the regular IL is not to be taken lightly because it's such a, you know, even missing 2 weeks is a huge chunk of a season in which there are only 8 or 9 weeks, right? So I think there's a lesson to be learned there. And that guy's got to be frustrated, you know, because asymptomatic or not, doesn't matter. You're not allowed back till you pass those protocols.
Last year it was Mauricio Dubon who fell into Tom's poor devil category, and now Luis Urias is taking the mantle.
Yeah, hamate in the spring and now COVID in the summer. I mean, the guy just can't get on the field. So doesn't matter how much talent you have if you can't get on the field.
Well, Todd, one of the guys who will obviously be taking some at-bats that might have otherwise gone to Urias would be Orlando Arcia. And he's young enough where if I said it seems like the guy has 9 lives, it probably wouldn't be quite the right expression. But I think when Urias was acquired way back in, I don't know, it seems like 10 years ago, one of the assumptions was that Orlando Arcia's days were probably numbered in Milwaukee. But that's not how David Stern saw it then. And obviously right now he figures to be, you know, the starting shortstop, particularly if there's a left-hander on the mound, but probably in general. And what have you seen from Arcia so far, and does it look like maybe he's ready to turn a corner?
I was thinking that this morning that of all the Zoom calls that we've done with Craig Counsell in summer camp, I don't think Arcia's name was brought up one time. I could be wrong, but I even if it was, it was just in passing. So, you know, I can't lie and say that I noticed much from him in summer camp because I don't think we noticed much of anything from anybody just because the way the games were and all that. But, you know, there you could do worse plugging in that guy and letting him go at the start of the season. There's no question that the Brewers were looking at Urias as a guy to push Arcia. And, you know, a guy that they could start there with regularity if Arcia got off to a bad start or, you know, whatever the case may be. But you know what you get with this guy. He's going to be an aggressive hitter. He's going to get himself out a lot of times. He's frustrating, but then he'll come through with some clutch hits. The defense is almost always there. So kind of is what it is at this point. I think it's fair to say he definitely has not lived up to the hype that he had as a prospect. Still a young guy, so there's still time. But with Urias in the background and, you know, assuming he can recover and get back on the field and contribute in some way, I think it becomes interesting at that point.
I was trying to put together a 30-man roster, bearing in mind that Ray Black, we know, is going to start the year on the injured list, Anderson, Urias. I was even figuring at the time that Ryan Braun would probably start the year there, and it doesn't look like that's, you know, certain one way or the other at this point. It's kind of hard to do. We know Justin Grimm and Logan Morrison, non-roster guys that will be on the roster. I'm curious who you think are some of the last guys that are going to make this team. I mean, the way Drew Rasmussen is thrown, it feels like we might be seeing that jump right away, that he could break camp. I guess break camp is still terminology we can use. As far as outfielders, you've got obviously Kane, Yelich, and Avisail Garcia. Ben Gamel's going to make it, and you know Ryan Braun could still play out there, but I'd be curious if they go with another outfielder given the roster flexibility they have and who that might be. You know, there are guys that could potentially play out there that also play the infield as well. And I don't know, who are some of the guys that you think are kind of on that fringe that could go one way or the other at this point?
Well, the 14 position players are pretty much all set, especially knowing Logan Morrison's going to be on the team. Brock Holt serves as an extra outfielder as well, and he's the Swiss Army knife of the whole. He could just basically play everywhere. So you've got just a couple of spots in the bullpen that have got to be hashed out. 40-man roster considerations are also in there. You know, Council more or less told us that Drew Rasmussen will be starting in the alternate training site in Appleton. And, you know, I think there might be like service time stuff involved there with him. And, you know, you don't have to stay down in the minors as long as you used to skirt that service, I think, because we're only talking 60 games. I think I read somewhere that it's like, you know, 6 or 7 games in, and then you get around that service time thing. I think we're going to see Drew Rasmussen. I don't think we're going to see him right away. A lot of those guys in Appleton are prospects that are just there for development purposes. So most of the guys that are cut from this camp are the guys that you'll see coming back, not the prospects like Ethan Small and people like that and Bryce Terang, who were assigned to Appleton just to give them 2 more months of coaching and development that they wouldn't have with no minor leagues this season. So, you know, I think that's where you're going to see the guys that are cut that don't make this initial 30-man roster out of the 45 men who are in camp. Those are the guys you're going to see coming back at some point when they need them. But, you know, they have so much versatility in their position player group. They're just covered at so many different positions. So you can pretty much, you know, tell who those 14 guys are going to be. You know, a lot of the guys they added to this team are veteran guys and versatile guys. And you just forget because it's been so stinking long since they formed their initial 40-man roster that how many new guys there are. But almost all of them are veteran guys. You know, there's not a whole lot of new young guys that are making the team. Most of these guys are veteran guys. And you have to wonder if that's going to work to the Brewers' advantage too, and what is going to be so many changes in the way the season is run, if having some older guys might be beneficial, because even though it's new for everybody, at least they've been around the block a few times, and the veteran guys seem to adjust better than the younger guys do to a whole bunch of new stuff being thrown at them.
I'm really curious from a ratings point of view. I think we all can assume that these first few games are going to get major interest from people who are just elated to have baseball back. And clearly, I mean, just from a ratings perspective, they'll do really well. I just am curious how we're going to feel about baseball at the beginning of September. You know, when everybody is still bunched up in the standings, it's completely unclear who's ahead in the playoff race, and the trade deadline will have come and gone, and we'll see if there's any action there. empty stadiums, a weird, weird season, still the threat of COVID hovering over everything. Is a possible, you know, is it possible it shuts down the season halfway through? I think is on everybody's mind. And I just, I'm curious to try to picture what it's going to be like in September. If people are rooting for a pennant race or just sort of surrendering to the randomness of baseball. Have you guys thought about that? It's been focused toward the start of the season. Halfway through, I just wonder what the sentiment is going to be. I feel like there's still so many unknowns we haven't even yet considered as far as how people are going to approach baseball and think about baseball when there's a month to go.
GR, I haven't thought past Friday, sorry.
I don't blame you, man. There's so much to talk about and so much to go through. So
well, we've
I guess
been
I
joking
understand.
In the press box when we've been out at Miller Park that, you know, the old cliche, take it one day at a time. We hear that in baseball so much. Well, it's never been more true. It's just never been more true. There's going to be so many things that are different. And everything, you know, everything these guys are going to see or they're going to be seeing for the first time, except for the game itself, you know. But even that has some rules changes and just little things that are COVID related about, you know, no spitting, no touching, no high-fiving, bring your own stuff to the on-deck. So there's just so many different ways they're operating that it's going to be, you know, a constant game of adjustments both on and off the field. And, you know, I asked Craig Counsell today about the comments you hear from all these camps are whoever doesn't get COVID is going to do the best. And, you know, it's almost like talent and the way teams play is not going to be that important anymore. Well, I think it is. You know, I do think even over 60 games, as much randomness as we're going to be subject to and as many outlying things as can happen in a 60 game season, you'd still like to be able to say that the teams that have the most talent and the teams that are playing the best are going to do the best. So, you know, we're about to embark on an incredible journey here. The journey's not as long as it used to be, but it's still going to be an incredible journey. And, you know, I can't wait till we get to the end to look back and just see what the heck meant the most as far as the results of games, because right now it's really hard to project that.
Heck, things are falling apart even as we record this podcast. I'm seeing tweets now that mentioned earlier that the Toronto Blue Jays were going to play some games at Pittsburgh, and it doesn't look like necessarily that's going to be approved by the Pennsylvania government. So Toronto's going to be looking for a home with one day to go.
Maybe they're just going to play 60 road games, you know?
And that's on the table, it sounds like. Yeah, some games were already going to be that way. They were going to be the home team in visiting stadiums. So.
And travel is the thing that scares everybody the most, because that's where the variables come in. You know, the Brewers have done a really good job of locking themselves down in a bubble for the 3 weeks at camp and doing well with all the COVID protocols and stuff. But once you get out there in the world, you know, and even though travel has been limited to regional play this year, you know, the Central play in the Central and the West play in the West and the East play in the East, except for the Blue Jays, who just don't seem to know what in the heck's going to happen to them. It's travel's what scares them, you know, and when you get out there, and even though it's chartered flights and chartered buses and team hotels and stuff like that, you're still out there in the world, and the world's a scary damn place right now. I think we can all agree.
To make it selfish, I'm really glad that the Brewers are not in the East and you know, having to worry about travel to get to, and, you know, how do you know where they're going to be? You can't make any plans if you were going to travel, you know, you're flying by the seat of your pants, even as a reporter at that point. So,
I mean, remember how excited people were at the start of the year that the Brewers were going to be matched up with AL East in interleague play and a trip to Fenway and the Yankees coming to Milwaukee and just all the things that we just don't get to see that much. Well, all that's out the window, but still, you know, even short trips are stuff that to be nervous about, because, you know, out there in the world, things are definitely different now. And so, again, you know, call it a cliche if you want, but this whole sport's and just like the rest of the world is going day to day right now. And it's just fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. Who knows how all this is going to play out? But that's what's going to make our jobs really, really interesting here. Even though we're zooming our way through life here as far as how we talk to people, just the great unknown is going to make this fascinating from a journalistic standpoint.
Since I've already broken the rule of talking about breaking or developing stories during a podcast, I might as well just do it again here and point out what the reports are out that the Dodgers are going to be signing Mookie Betts to a 12-year extension or something in that neighborhood. Of course, an outrageous amount of money. No idea even right now what that is. But that seems to me would make it an even better move for the Brewers to have signed Christian Yelich to a long-term extension coming into the season, because I think seeing what the numbers Mookie Betts is going to command would drive up everybody's price in the superstar tier, which is, of course, where we view Christian Yelich. So, I mean, that move, especially because of the pandemic, but now with Mookie Betts as well, it already feels like a great move, you know? It feels like they already did the best they possibly could by signing Christian Yelich at that point in the season, doesn't it?
I think he's pleased, and I think they're pleased. You know, you hear a lot of criticism that he took a home team discount. You don't hear people talking about that anymore with the financial difficulties that probably await the game down the road coming out of the pandemic. You know, Mookie Betts is a top five player in baseball, and the Dodgers have the most money of anybody. So, you know, perhaps it's not tremendously shocking that that's going to work out for those two parties, but let's just see what happens with the general population of baseball going forward as far as, you know, the finances of the game and how much the pandemic's going to change all that.
How happy, you know, talked to Freddie Peralta earlier this week, but how happy are both sides with that contract now? Brewers and Peralta, it's looking like a win-win already for both sides, considering what's going on with COVID.
I mean, financial security has never looked better, you know, to ball players than it does right now, not knowing how much of a hit teams are going to take going forward as far as their payroll.
Before I let you guys go, I'm interested from both of you, one question that you still have about this Brewers team, I'm sure there's many, but one big burning question that maybe hasn't been answered thus far from what you've seen in the summer camp games, and if you dare be so bold, I know you're living day to day, one prediction, something that might, I don't know. So look into your crystal ball and offer something about this Brewers team. Todd, you can go first.
I'll let Tom go first.
Oh, very well. Thanks. Birthday boy goes first.
All right, here's my bold prediction. Christian Yelich does not stay in a slump too much longer. If I was the Cubs pitchers, I'd be real nervous about the fact that he has not swung the bat that great in camp. So I'm guessing when he starts seeing somebody else's uniforms, you know, the light bulb's going to go off. So great players are great players, and I think he'll be fine. The other thing I will say is I think Brandon Woodruff is on the verge of becoming one of the best pitchers in baseball. We're only going to get to see 10 or 11 starts from him, but I really think this guy is on the verge of greatness. And as much trouble as the Brewers have had in developing their own pitching, this guy is somebody to watch.
Way to go out on a limb there with those predictions.
Hey, you let me go first. I took the two slam dunks.
True. Low-hanging fruit.
I endorsed their best pitcher and their best player. That's why I live to be this ripe old age, by not stepping out on narrow limbs.
I put it.
You are flying in the face of that opening day curse, though, so at least there's that to contend with.
Well, it's time for that to end, right? Time for that to end. And opening day's on July 24th this year, so I think all that stuff's out the window.
I will. I'll say, I'm going to leave with a couple of questions or things that I think are going to be that will bear watching. Number one, I want to see how Corey Knebel bounces back, because if he comes back anywhere close to the all-star form that the Brewers saw him in 2018, that's obviously a terrific addition to add back to the bullpen with Josh Hader. We were watching his velocity during summer camp, and it was down quite a few clicks from what it usually is. And we never really got an answer as to was that expected, or was he just kind of dialing it back a little bit? But if he gets back up into the high 90s and He's got that 12-6 curveball work, and that's a tremendous weapon for the Brewers to have. And the other thing I think bears watching is the catching position. And obviously the Brewers added Omar Narvaez. He had a really good summer camp hitting. Defense is obviously where the question mark is with him, and I think that's going to continue throughout the course of this short season. And we'll see how not only he handles the glove, but how he handles the staff. And the Brewers do have a good insurance policy behind the plate in Manny Pena. Very, very reliable. He's not going to wow you offensively, but, you know, he handles the staff well, very good defensively. So, you know, maybe there's a way that the Brewers will swing Narvaez at DH every once in a while. I don't think there's any question they'd probably like to get him in the majority or play him more behind the plate than Pena because of his offensive ability. But that's another spot, too, to me that I think will be interesting to watch.
They are Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak covering the Milwaukee Brewers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything they have at jsonline.com. They'll have you covered as the Brewers open the season on Friday. That's a week before their home opener on July 31st. Some exciting moments to look forward to for sports fans that have been waiting for live action for quite some time. And as a reminder, there is a flash sale right now. Check it out at jsonline.com/deal. Great deals for new subscribers. A year-long subscription, less than $40. It's you can do a weekly one if you want, or for the first 3 months you can get it for 99 cents. There's a lot of great opportunities there, so you'll want to check that out. That deal does end on Thursday, so you'll want to get to it as soon as you possibly can. Thanks for joining us, gentlemen. Good luck at the games, and yeah, hopefully this baseball continues for a long time here for the entirety of the 2 months and the playoffs afterwards.
JR, always a pleasure.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big.